The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers podcast. Today we're catching up again with Bruce Richardson. Bruce is Executive Chairman and CEO of Anson Resources. ASX code is ASN, and it's trading at 28 cents for a market cap of about 336 million. Cash is around 50 million. So things have moved along quite nicely for the company since we last spoke. And that's essentially around the Paradox Lithium Project in the US. It's in Utah, near the Four Corners there. It's of the DLE type, direct lithium extraction type. And as the market cap growth since we last spoke tells us, it's getting some momentum, not the least of which was the establishment of a maiden JORC resource, which all up contained about just over a million tonnes of lithium carbon equivalent, plus 5.2 million tonnes of bromine. There's various studies underway, and the company has also been picking up new projects. So I'll let Bruce tell the story from here on in. So with that, I'll say g'day, Bruce, and welcome to the podcast.
G'day, Barry.
Now, Bruce, I was just wondering if, Paradox, can we just quickly run through that resource estimate just to give people a sense of the scale of the project and what the plan, now that you've got that under your belt, do you move into sort of development studies?
So the total, as you said, is around about a million tonnes of lithium carbonate equivalent. This is a different type of project. It's not spodumene. It's not South American brines. It's similar to a project in Arkansas, which a company called Standard Lithium has been developing some time. It's a depth. We're around about 6,000 feet down and to 8,000 feet, two different horizons now, the Paradox, the Mississippian formations. So we have a great deal of resource from both of those, similar to what they call the Smackover formation over in Arkansas. So how this works is that we started off with a historical resource in the Paradox, historical record of an assay in the Paradox around about caustic 31, about 6,000 feet below surface. The brine comes out under its own pressure, and that's different to Arkansas. So having pressure around about 4,500 PSI, it pushes this brine to the surface, and therefore you don't need to pump. So in South America and the brines there, you pump. And in Arkansas, you need to pump, but given the pressure that we have, it pulls itself to the surface around about 1,800 PSI as it gets to the surface, which allows it to push itself along to the production location. All that saving energy and its ESG credentials there by not having to use any sort of carbon fuels to move the brine around. Mm. So Plastic 31, we identified from an earlier assay report done in the 60s, the crew drilled through this area on the way down an oil horizon at around about 8,000 feet. The brine came out under its own pressure and all over the crew. They assayed it back then. They got a very high result. And we went back into that well and those wells, and we've identified that we have a similar type of brine to that over in Arkansas. In clastic 31, it's about 30 feet thick, and we identified in other clastics in the Paradox additional brine. But through some research, we found that in the lower formation, the Mississippian units, we found that there was additional brine down there, and it hadn't been assayed previously for lithium. During last summer, northern summer, we drilled through down to the Mississippian or re-entered the maps of Mississippian through the existing wells, and sampled and got a very good grade, similar grade to that from Clastic 31. Seemed to be some sort of interconnectivity between the two, mm-hmm. even though they're 2,000 feet apart, something there with the same temperature, same pressure, and similar grade. And that's added on an additional 605,000 tonnes to our resource, which gave us the one just over 1 million tonnes. So that was last year's program, very successful, led into a DFS. So we announced all that last year. And subsequently, we've been looking at expanding the resource. So we have additional wells to the west of the initial area. We call that the Western Strategy. Earlier this year, we received permits to drill for those two wells. They're called Mineral Canyon and Sunburst. The area looks similar. The geology looks similar. The JORC resource we anticipate will be something similar to what we've already achieved in with the current Eastern Strategy. And then just the past week or so, we've announced the Green River Project, which is another project about another area about 50 kilometres away from where we are at present. What we identified was that the same brine continues in a porous rock from where we are over in the Long Canyon or the Paradox area over to the Green River Lithium Project area. And that's the current way of we anticipate of further increasing our resource.
Right.
Green River is around about 1,200 claims, a little bit smaller in area, currently about 1,800 for the Paradox, but we anticipate we'll get a similar type of resource over there. So it's becoming a much bigger project that we be able to further look at further increasing our anticipated production rate sometime later this year.
Just as a matter of interest, when you talk about these claims, were they put together previously for oil and gas exploration and you've been able to come along and pick them up and do a deal or two for lithium?
Yeah, Barry, that's one of the ways that we do the resources. We re-enter old wells, old oil and gas wells.
Right.
So we don't sort of buy the area. We peg or stake the area from the government. So these areas might have been staked previously for oil. And some of them are still operating. So there's still some of the areas they're still extracting oil at a different, different depth. But they have different licenses for different minerals or commodities, you say. So there's one for oil, there's one for gold, there's one for salts or for lithium like this. So, and you can have an agricultural license on the surface as well. So multiple licensing over the same area.
Right, okay. Now you mentioned the DFS in September last year. It came out with some very impressive figures. Production year 1 to 10 of 13,000 tonnes per annum of lithium carbonate, mine life of 23 years. C1 OPEX of US $4,368 a tonne, obviously very competitive if we plugged in the spot market of around $70,000 a tonne. Yeah. I'm just wondering, and you've talked about the expansion into, well, the move over to that Western strategy, but... You're not exactly resource constrained at this stage. It's a big resource. It's got very attractive fundamentals. So have you got a twin strategy, is it, that you're going to continue to expand the resource plus get cracking on development?
Yes, that's right. We're doing two at the same time. So as you know, the lithium market is still looking very buoyant. With still expected by 2030 there will be a shortage of supply or excess demand, if you like, which should be, you know, contribute to good prices over the next period. So we see that the opportunity there for lithium is very positive, and we're pushing ahead with increasing resource. So currently we have around about 1 million tonnes, and you know they are anticipated 13,000 tonnes per annum. That would take us, you know, just a little bit under 100 years of resource of mine life. So of course we're looking to increase that, but and then we're adding on additional resource. By the, you know, the additional drilling program out there at the Western area, the Western Strategy, and then later at the Green River Lithium Project area, and all that will mean that while we sort of cut our teeth on a 13,000 ton per annum lithium carbonate plant, we'll have key learnings and which will help us with the expansion into the Western area and later into Green River.
Okay. Now, one thing that spodumene operations have taught us and brines in Latin America is that each project is very different. And I'm just wondering whether what you've established to date is the nature of the brine aquifers across that basin is fairly consistent, or do you expect subtle or quite possibly major differences between the operations, say, on the east and the west?
Well, we know that the brine continues from the east to the west. So altogether, that's about 75 kilometres.
Right.
And then you can draw a radius about that big. There's no significant geological feature that blocks it from one end to the other.
Mm.
But the difference is in, you know, that we have a lot of similarities. We have the same pressure in both areas. And it's like it's a lot of porous rock containing the brine, and it's continuous over the whole area. So then it comes down to what's in the brine. So in the eastern area, we've sampled it. We know the grade. We've reported the grade.
Mm.
In the western area and the western strategy and further afield to the Green River project, we know the brine is there, but we haven't got assay results.
Right.
So if all things being equal, we expect that the whole thing will be continuous. A continuous body of brine and porous rock, and that should give us a very good result.
Right, okay. Obviously, the recovery, the DLE, the direct extraction method, you have a technology arrangement, is it, with Sun Resin?
That's right. So DLE, direct lithium extraction, is not new. It's been around for a long time. It's been used in South America for a long time. Basically, it's a resin which attracts lithium only onto it. And then it's washed off in with either water. In our case, it's water. In other processes, they use chemicals, so the hydrochloric or sulfuric acid. So we chose water because we have access to the Colorado River. We recently announced an offtake agreement for the water, endorsed or approved by the Wayne County government. So we have approval for it as well. So we buy it, we're subleasing the water from another organization,
mm-hmm.
another company. So we have guaranteed water there, which helps with the process. So Sun Resin is also not new. It's been around for some time, as the name indicates, they're a resin company, not just a lithium resin company, but they make resin for a number of other processes, including things like apple juice and cleaning up the apple juice to make it clearer, different colors and all that type mm-hmm. of thing. So they're a very experienced resin company. They have existing projects in operation in China, so four already since 2018, producing up to 10,000 tons per annum. Very successful already. So what that means is, having been commercialized, the risk with the technology is much lower.
Right.
The bugs have been worked out and you know, improvements made, which we will take advantage of. So when we did the DFS, we worked alongside with Sun Resin in designing the plant and estimating the costs that will be involved, and thinking about all the you know, supply issues and longer term cooperation. So we signed an agreement with them so we could have this sort of longer term thing going. There will be a need to resupply the resin that goes in the tanks that does the extraction, the DLE process. So over time, everything wears down with water.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect that over a couple of years, there'll be some deterioration in the resin material that's in those tanks. And so we need to keep a good relationship with Sun Resin. So, you know, I spent 15 years living in China. I've got a lot of experience there with working with Chinese companies. So we're taking advantage of that as well.
Right, okay. And I see there's a report I was reading before. 91.5% recovery is possible?
Yes. So there's two parts of making lithium carbonate. First part is the extraction of the lithium. That's the DLE part. And then there's the purification of that material as it comes out to achieve battery grade of 99.5%.
Mm.
So the DLE, the first part there is where the comparison is on 91.5, which we did altogether four different types of test work, three with DLE technologies. And on one of them, we got an 80% recovery, but on this particular one from Sun Resin, we got 91.5, because that then translates into a better financial return for your investment, better return for the shareholders. And then from there, you then do a number of other processes to clean up or to purify the lithium to reach that battery grade. So there's a bit more loss on the way down, but when you look at the total amount, it's still a very good result, and that's what's reflected in the DFS estimates.
Not particularly well known in this market, DLE, but I see, like, was it last year, Rio Tinto spent close to US 900 million, acquiring a deal, well, a lithium brines project in Argentina and proposing, though, going down the DLE route. So it's you mentioned there's projects around the world using, well, the sun resin process. So it's obviously a growing part of the lithium industry, as it were.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, for the environment, it's much better. It's contained within a plant. So you don't have ponds, so you don't use as much land, as much surface disturbance. It's something that we're very conscious of. The ESG credentials we have are very good, and we focus on having minimum impact on the environment. So our extraction technique, using existing pressure, we only have a couple of pipes coming out of the ground, so there's not a like a oil derrick or anything at the top, or any sort of pump which have some impact on the environment. And then we take it inside a plant and process it there. I can't speak on behalf of SunResin. I know that they're very busy. There are a number of other companies that are looking now at the technology, internationally, Rio Tinto being one. There's also another large company which I've heard they're close to finalizing some arrangements. For us, we've been working with them since 2019, so we've done a number of tests both in China, and then we've replicated their test work here in a sort of small-scale pilot plant. And confirm that we have something similar to some similar results to what they were able to achieve.
Yeah. Sorry to flip around here a bit, but I was just thinking, trying to visualize it in my mind, the production wells, do they have to be moved around as each zone is zoned out, or is there a constant flow of this brine over time?
Yeah, there's a constant flow. So it's not like a oil project with pods of oil. It's a uniform rock, porous rock containing brine in a 75 kilometer by radius area, right? So pi r squared and all that's a very big area containing similar brine throughout. So there's no need to move our equipment from one place to other. It's like a straw in a big lake now. Yeah, before okay. It was like a straw in a glass of Coke, now we're in a big lake.
So a very low impact on the surface overall compared to a spodumene mine or a
So we don't have much disturbance. We don't have big evaporation ponds. We have four pipes about 10 inch in diameter coming out of the ground, jointed together into a 22 inch pipe, and then that the pressure which comes out of the ground, the brine comes out of the ground, it pushes itself along to the production site. The pipe carrying that to the production site is underground, so no impact visually. Re-emerges, and we're looking to put that into the plant immediately, so it's sort of within minutes of coming out of the ground, it's already into the production process.
Right. And I guess that goes to the comparatively low CapEx cost for what is essentially a phase one of the project, $495 million. So well-cost pipelines would be a small part of that. It's basically the DLE processing plant, is it, the main component?
Yes, that's right. The pipeline would be something in the order of 20 million out of that 500 uninstalled, but it's around about that figure and a small part of the overall cost. The majority is not actually in the equipment for the DLE. The majority is in the infrastructure, so the utilities, etc. There's a lot of work to be done, buildings, that type of thing. And it is relatively low, and we have like a two-year payback on that with the current DFS projections.
Now, Bruce, you have been in Vancouver attending the Battery Mineral Intelligence World Tour, as they call it, on everything related to lithium-ion batteries and the energy transition. What did you make of it? Was there a bit of a buzz there?
Yes, there was a bit of a buzz there. The forecast from Benchmark are looking even more positive than they were 12 months ago, as far as lithium demand is concerned. There's no easy catch up for supply. So projects which look like they can get into production, in production now, or getting into production in the next couple of years are going to benefit from that. So very exciting conference, and very interesting to see how all that's going to pan out over the next 5 to 7 years.
Okay. Now you're looking at, for Paradox, roughly 2025, first production?
That's right. It's our forecast at the moment. We're still doing some the design to the final design. So the reason for that is to improve the accuracy of our costs. We've been working with the Worley Group and the DFS, and we think that with this additional work that we're doing, it'll further identify how much we will need to invest and any technical issues that might be required or they'll be focused on this in this engineering study. We anticipate that'll be finished by around about middle of the year, and then we'll be moving into final investment decision. We've already been talking to banks and export credit agencies, brokers, all sorts of different offtake parties and strategic partners, a whole bunch of different options as far as finance is concerned. There is a lot of interest and a lot of support, and we think that by the middle of the year we'll be able to finalise all of our financing arrangements and then move into production, move into construction not long after that, production in 2025.
Right. Now, Utah, obviously in the States, it's a bit hard to get a drink occasionally, but it wouldn't be a much better place to be moving ahead with a lithium project. And I'm thinking mainly of the federal incentives, you know, through the IRA Act and other incentives for the energy transition. Do you expect the project to qualify, benefit from the government incentives?
Yes. So, you know, we have had discussions with the federal government, Department of Energy, about their programs. I guess, and, you know, sort of in short, it's with the sort of project they would like to finance. A couple of things that they need from us: offtake agreement, you know, at least in a pathway to an offtake agreement, ability to repay the loan, which of course the DFS will addresses, and finally is environmental approval. So we've already done a lot of the environmental studies, etc. So we're in the process of finalising all that, and then we'd be ready to submit our final application and then see how the DOE looks at it.
Right. So a lot to look out for in 2023 in terms of the approvals process and getting into production by 2025, ideally timed with lithium markets. As I said at the start, they've come back, prices come back a bit, $70,000 US a ton. But when you've got OPEX of less than $5,000 a ton, robust project, no matter.
Yes, yeah. That's right. It's going to be a very big year for Anson. This is a watershed year for us as far as being able to raise the finance and start to break ground and get things moving forward. Very positive with the lithium industry, the way it's looking at the moment. No replacements in sight, and demand continuing to increase. Economy is now looking a lot better than they did even, you know, Christmas time. So all very positive.
That's very true. All righty, Bruce. Well, thanks for your time. Very interesting drawing. We'll be watching with interest as 2023 unfolds. Good luck with it all. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Barry.